Welcome to Studio Tulsa. I'm Rich Fisher. Today we hear about the city of Tulsa's efforts to address issues of resilience and equity across demographic and geographic sectors of the community. Mayor G.T. Bynum's administration is focused on the collection of data to aid in the direction and decision-making about city resources and priorities. Since the beginning of the administration, the city has been collecting data in all aspects of city operation. Today we'll hear about one of the efforts. This past April, the first Tulsa Equality Indicator was released, using a tool developed by the City University of New York's Institute for State and Local Governance and the Rockefeller Foundation's 100 Resilient Cities Network. The Tulsa report focused on six areas: economic opportunity, education, housing, justice, public health, and services. The score for Tulsa was 38.93 out of 100 and offers the city a baseline for directing future decision-making and policy priorities. Joining me today to discuss how the city is responding to these statistics is the Chief Resilience Officer for the city, Devon Douglas. Prior to joining city government, she served as the Economic Opportunity and Poverty Policy Analyst for the Oklahoma Policy Institute. She also was the lead organizer for a well-received series of community forums, Tulsa Talks, which was convened after a series of national police shootings, which addressed racial disparities and safety here in Tulsa. She joins me today to talk about the Tulsa Equity Indicator and how this will help make Tulsa a more resilient city. Devon Douglas, welcome to Studio Tulsa. Thanks very much for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
I know the city is busy coming up with an action plans and putting action and plans in place to address the equality indicators. You've had the first year of hard data on where we stand as a community and in a lot of different areas of disparities between various parts of the town and various ethnic compositions of the city. But before we talk about that, this idea of resilience, it seems to have morphed over the years. When I first started hearing about resilience, it was right in the years after 9/11 and Hurricane Katrina. Resilience started out as being fortifying cities and communities against terrorism or man-made disasters. And then after Hurricane Katrina, it became apparent, wow, we can't even handle huge natural disasters. So resilience became this catch-all phrase for making a city more responsive to any sort of disruptions. But it sounds like it's morphed again. What do we mean by resilience today?
Yeah, so the way that we define resilience in the Mayor's Office of Resilience and Equity is the capacity for an individual, a family, a neighborhood, or a city to survive, adapt, grow, and thrive in the face of trauma. And so that trauma can be a shock, which is large scale, usually one-time event, these types of things that you were talking about. An ice storm, it can be extreme heat. It can be a man-made, like terrorist attacks or cyber attacks now, right? So those are all shocks, and that's a type of trauma that cities can experience. And then there are stressors, and these are these slow-burning things that cities experience. And these include things like lack of access to quality education, lack of access to transportation, poorly built roads, racism, all of these things, homelessness, poverty. They are all examples of stressors that cities can face. And while some of them may not seem like they're a problem for a city, what ends up happening is that a shock comes inevitably, because we know that in the 21st century, cities will experience shocks. And if we are not addressing the slow-burning stressors, when the shocks come, they are even larger because we're not prepared to respond in an effective way.
You can, a domestic violence is still a trauma.
Exactly.
One incident is still
exactly
a trauma.
And so that's what we
scale.
See on the small scale. So with individuals, you can take someone who is living in poverty, right? And so that's the stressor. And they can make it day to day. There are things that they struggle through, but they can sometimes get their head above water to catch their breath before they go back under. But then something large scale happens. They have a heart attack, and now they have hospital bills, and they've missed work, and so they possibly lose their job, and so then they get a payday loan, and then and on and on. And so if the stressor of poverty were not there, then the shock of having a heart attack would not affect the rest of their life. They already have to recuperate from the physical pain of such a traumatic event in their health. But having these social things, these slow burning things in the background exacerbates the problem. And we see this on all scales in institutions like universities, in institutions like churches, and we see it on a grand scale of cities and even nation states.
Yeah, you're talking about the health system, the criminal justice system.
Absolutely.
Education system, all of your large systems see the results, yeah.
Exactly. And so resilience does include the minute, and it also includes the macro. And so we're trying to address these things on all levels.
Now, earlier this year, I think it was in April, you announced the first year of collection of data under this Rockefeller Foundation plan, this thing called the Equality Indicators.
Yes.
Tulsa's, I guess, was an expanded city to start collecting this data. Mm-hmm. Take us back through that process.
Yes.
Why is this important?
So this is important because for several reasons. Reason one is that many of the issues of disparity that Tulsans know and understand, we've been talking about, we agree on them. We agree that we have issues with racial disparity across many different fields. We know that there are gender disparities. We know that we rank number one in the world per capita in women in incarceration. We know that we now in the United States are the number one incarcerator of people, period, as a state. And so we know that there are effects of that. And we know that because of these slow burning problems, we know that we have inequity in our city. And so what Equality Indicators does is it gives a number and it quantifies the problems that we're seeing. And not only does it do that, but it brings it all in one place. There are lots of nonprofits in our city, lots of foundations that are doing amazing work. But oftentimes their information, they only have it, right, on their issue area. By bringing together issues of justice, the way we do services in the city, education, the six different themes that we have, it allows us to get a snapshot of this place and time and see where we are today so that we can see where we're going in the future. It's very difficult to make a plan and move forward on something and change things when you don't even know where you are.
Of course, Mayor Bynum has made data collection and acting on data collection and
yes,
the analysis of that data a big part of his administration. I assume this follows right along.
It falls in perfectly. The Equality Indicators tool is actually a result of being a part of the 100 Resilient Cities Network. And when they told us that we could apply as one of the North American cities for this grant, I jumped at the opportunity because it married two of the biggest things in the Bynum administration that we care about, which are equity and making decisions based on data. It has been a whirlwind adventure learning about our city in this way, and also the response from community organizations and churches and other faith groups coming together and saying, hey, we see these problems and we want to work on them. We've had groups like CAP Tulsa and the YWCA and Domestic Violence Intervention Services say, we see these numbers and we want to work them into how we work as an organization. So people are picking them up across our city and saying, this is a problem and we're going to address it.
Now, earlier you were saying we all know that the problems exist, but it's probably in the past on a lot of these areas, what we knew was a problem was anecdotal.
Yes, absolutely. And that's the great thing about this, right? There was a little bit of pushback because there were a few people who said, we've known this for 20 years. Why have you done this? And my response is, we've known it for 20 years and these aren't changing. In fact, some of them are changing, but they're getting worse. And so if we don't call things out, if we only rely on anecdata, as we call it, if we only rely on these things, then we can't actually. Yeah, the gut feeling, right?
Yeah.
So how do we create, you know, a theory of change and work together as a community if we don't even know what the rules of the game are? And so we need to have it all laid out. And thankfully, because of City University of New York and their Institute of State and Local Governance, we're able to do that now with Equality Indicators.
So when the first year of data came in, was there any surprises from various stakeholders in the city saying, Wow, I didn't know it was that bad.
Yeah, I think that people were a little surprised about the payday loan number. We have a score of a 9 on that, at 9 out of 100. The rate of payday lending institution to banks in North Tulsa compared to Midtown and South Tulsa, it's alarming.
Yeah, it's 1-to-1, basically. In North Tulsa, it's 1-to-1.
It's really bad. And so when you have these numbers that look like that, people think, generally speaking, folks kind of know about payday lending institutions. They know that the interest rates are kind of high. They don't really know. But when you're thinking of like an APR of over 300% and that they are advertised to certain populations but not others, right, and then there aren't even other options. Even if there were all of these payday loan institutions, but there are banks as alternatives, that would be one thing. But when we're talking, you know, a proliferation of payday lending institutions in one part of our city but not in others, it starts to become a disturbing trend.
That was a statistic that stuck out to me. It was that idea that in South Tulsa, there are 12 banks to every one payday loan. And in North Tulsa, it's literally 1-to-1.
Yeah.
That's an amazing statistic.
It's amazing in that it's terrible. You know, I mean, it kind of boggles the mind, right? And so we really are looking at things like that. And that's only indicative of one thing. You know, there are so many other issues. There are race and youth homelessness. There's, you know, the issue of our education numbers. When you see race and mobility, you have children who are changing schools throughout the school year, so they don't have a continuity in their education. They don't have stability in their lives.
Yeah, mobility numbers in certain populations here in the city, that's what, 30, 40, 50%?
Something? Yeah, I mean, we have kids moving all the time, changing schools for one reason or another.
Yeah.
And we know that there's correlation with achievement when or lack thereof.
Now, how can you act on a couple of those things? For example, the payday loan things. What can the city do on something like this? Because we think of that as sort of a provenance of private enterprise. You know, I mean, is it about convincing more banks to say, you got to put some branches in North Tulsa?
So there's a few things, right? So the first thing is, and we like to talk about this when we discuss equality indicators and with the Resilient Tulsa strategy, that these things aren't solely for the city. The city is the leader on this in that we're holding it up and we're you know, setting the pace and, you know, charting the path. But this is for everyone in the community. There are people in the banking community, I'm sure, who have read equality indicators at this point. And there are some decisions that they can make without us telling them to do something.
Or asking you, because that's all you can do.
Yeah, exactly. And there are people in the community who can make a decision and say, I don't want this in my neighborhood. Or I want people, no matter what part of town, my neighbors should be able to have access to the same things that I have access to. And so we really believe that nonprofits, individuals, faith institutions, universities, we can all come together and decide what kind of Tulsa we want Tulsa to be. If we're happy with the status quo, that's one thing. But if we see some things in equality indicators that make us shake our head or make us actually put our head down because we're saddened by these numbers, then we as Tulsans can make that decision to change.
My guest today is Devon Douglas. She is the City of Tulsa's Chief Resilience Officer. We're talking about the first year of data from Tulsa Equality Indicators, which came out during the spring, but the city is now using that data to, I guess, come up with strategies to help improve some of these scores. And in the course of improving the scores, you're improving the relative health of the community. Now, the overall indicator score was 38.93 out of 100.
Yes.
That sounds really low.
Yeah.
Is it low compared to other cities of our size?
So there's two parts to that. Is the score low out of 100? Yes, it is a low score. But that's because of the nature of what we're doing. The first year is measuring our greatest levels of disparity. We could have measured things that would have given us a higher score. We could have said, you know, the number of, you know, women to men in our universities in Tulsa. We could have done that, and mm-hmm. that would have bumped our score a little bit because the disparity isn't high there, right? We could have done any number of things to show that we don't have disparity or inequity or inequality in our city, but that's not the point. The point is to see where the pain is, and you determine where those things are based on what members of the community said. We did 7 community feedback sessions plus an online survey to determine what Tulsans think were problems in our city. And from there, we turned that into data points that we could measure year over year. So is the score low? Absolutely. It's low, and it is going to be.
Should we not compare ourselves to other cities?
And that's the second part. We should not compare ourselves to other cities. And the reason why we shouldn't is because they're completely different data sources. Take the city of Tulsa. We have 54 indicators. The city of New York, I believe, have 96. And their indicators come from different sources. They don't necessarily come from the same things like the census or the American or the ACS, American Community Survey. We could compare certain things to other cities. Maybe you could compare rates, but to compare the actual scores, it actually doesn't make sense to compare in that way.
So really, 100 is gold. Yeah. You're shooting for 100.
Yeah, so 100.
I mean, 100 is a goal you'll never attain, I'm sure.
That's exactly it. 100 is a score that we hope in the future one day to attain.
There were a few bright spots.
Yeah.
Public health was the highest indicated area. And the one thing that this confirms, we've had a multi-year project to reduce the life expectancy discrepancy between, say, North Tulsa and the rest of the city. Mm-hmm. I think when we started working on that, it was about 12 years, if I'm mm-hmm. not. Now it's 8.
Mm-hmm.
And that's like a 4-year improvement. And that goes to a lot of dedicated effort to sort of lower that discrepancy. I think this is good data to say, okay, what we've been doing has been working. Mm-hmm. Let's keep working on it.
Yeah. So the thing about equality indicators that is kind of difficult is that we can measure the disparity, but we cannot measure what's making the change. Like, this tool does not do that.
No.
And it also doesn't tell you what policy to choose in order to make changes. So, for example, there's one with race and homeless youth. I believe for that one, the disadvantaged group is Native American youth, and the advantaged group is our white youth. The answer, or what could happen, right? You could have more white homeless youth, and that would actually make the number more equitable because you're measuring rates, okay? But no one would
wants
suggest
more homeless.
Wants more homeless children. Like, no one wants that. And so what we have to do is, as policymakers, as community members, is we look at this information and we, as intelligent people, have to make the policy changes. And again, we don't know if it's because, one organization did one thing or another. But the issue is that these are numbers to rally behind, because the key with equality indicators is that these numbers represent people. And so the goal is not even necessarily to get to 100. The goal is to change people's lives. And so when we change people's lives, the numbers will follow. And so that's what we are asking people, and we implore that people see the folks behind the numbers instead of focusing on 38.93 or 100 or what have you. Focus on how this affects your fellow Tulsan.
Well, what are some of the target areas that you've collected data on that you've really said, okay, this is something we need to work on? Mm-hmm. And give us an example of some of the action plans maybe that have come out of this data collection.
Yeah, so Resilient Tulsa, the strategy, an equitable, action-oriented, and collaborative roadmap for all of Tulsa, equality indicators is one of 41 actions within Resilient Tulsa. And so we've been working on this for almost 2 years now, and the way that it worked was, it's not one-to-one. There are 54 indicators. There aren't 54 actions that address each one.
Right, yeah. I mean, you have to pick a few.
Right. And so what we are seeing, one of the biggest areas that is teased out in Resilient Tulsa is the justice-involved population. So people who have come in contact with the criminal justice system.
So you're working with the police. You're probably working with the DA's mm-hmm. office.
We are working with, so really on the back end, mostly is what's in the strategy. So how do we amplify The city's banned the box order. So we had banned the box for the city of Tulsa, which for those playing at home is banning a box on applications that tell whether or not, that asks whether or not you've been convicted of crimes, right? So we know that as a best practice across the country, that helps increase employment levels. We know that people who have been involved in the criminal justice system, studies show that these folks are great workers and in many cases better employees than their non-criminal justice involved counterparts. And so one of the actions in the strategy is about amplifying the ban the box executive order. And part of that looks like, let's get other companies in the city of Tulsa to sign on to that because it's only for the city government. So let's think about, you know, these organizations that are leaders in our city, they can ban the box as well. Another big project is helping organizations that would like to hire people who've been involved in the criminal justice system understand what our fellow Tulsans who've been through that process, what it actually means to hire someone who's been in jail or prison before, how to be a good corporate neighbor, right? And there are people who are already doing this work. There are people like Workforce Tulsa and some of the folks at the chamber who do this. Our goal as a city is to amplify what they're doing, provide support to what they're doing.
Now, if I can interrupt just for a second, you know, in the justice section, there was a number of indicators which showed there's still a lot of racial disparity and gender disparity in who's arrested and who comes in contact with a criminal justice system.
Absolutely.
I think, juveniles, I think it was like 3-1. You're more likely to be black than white. Adults, it's 2-1. For women, they're 3 times the national average of coming in contact with the criminal justice system. Are you not giving those numbers to the police department? Or I'm sure they may have these already.
These are their numbers.
They're numbers. They're very aware.
We got them from the police department.
But is this city developing strategies to look at what's happening as far as this racial disparity?
Yes. So we are there are several things that we can do. For example, City Council is about to do hearings on the equality indicators numbers and looking into what could be the source of the disparate numbers. So there are many options out there. We are working in concert with Tulsa Police Department and other folks. You know, there are Criminal Justice Collaborative here in the city of Tulsa where we're working with folks outside of city government to make sure that people in Tulsa are safe, and we're also making sure that it's equitable, and that's the goal.
My guest today is Devon Douglas, the City of Tulsa's Chief Resilience Officer. We're talking about some of the strategies the cities are undertaking to improve their equality indicators. They've done over a year of data collection to look at sort of the equality indicators within the city in public health services, economic opportunity, justice, education, and housing. Well, is there any sort of sub areas that you've collected data on that the city is sort of keyed on and say, this is something maybe we can make a change, you know, soon? I mean, has there been some sort of pointed in areas that you're looking at?
Well, in one other action within Resilient Tulsa is hiring a housing policy director in City Hall. And we haven't had one of those before.
A housing policy director?
Yes.
Okay. So what does that mean?
Yeah. So, you know, just like we have Christina Starzl da Silva is our director of community development and policy, and she focuses on health and as well as immigration issues. She will be releasing something similar to Resilient Tulsa in some ways, but it's called the New Tulsans Initiative, focused on immigration issues and how do we be a more welcoming city. The same with the housing policy director. There are housing policy issues that the city can touch. We have one of the highest eviction rates in the country. Our eviction rate is higher than the city of Oklahoma City, even though Tulsa is considered to be, this is air quotes, it's a lower cost of living, lower cost of doing business, and you still have higher rates of eviction. So why is that? So learning about what the problems are and then finding solutions. And again, being the leader, being the convener for organizations and folks within the city of Tulsa, not the city of Tulsa government, but Tulsa generally speaking, to make sure that our neighbors aren't being evicted, to make sure that people have homes, that children have stability, that people have opportunity, that eviction cuts down on, right? And so that's what one of the many things that the housing policy director.
You look at the eviction automatically focuses on your education indicator, which says that mobility is really high in poor income areas.
Absolutely.
Where they're moving school to school. Well, if a family's being evicted, they're probably moving to a new housing and
exactly.
changing schools.
Absolutely. We know that, you know, there are other issues, some code enforcement things that a housing policy director could help with. We see these problems, and that's the great thing about Mayor Bynum and this administration is that once we have the data that proves there's a problem, we want to act on it. We also recognize, though, that just because we act quickly doesn't mean that we're going to see the results quickly. And that's hard, right? It's hard not just for us, but obviously it's hard for people in the community who are wanting
Well, that's the
change.
That's the trick for any government action.
Right.
I mean,
exactly.
It takes years and people change. The government, the people who run the
government change.
Yeah.
That's very clear. Administrations change. The needs change. One of the things we talk about in the mayor's office is the difference between technical problems and adaptive problems. A technical problem is something like a crack in your windshield. You know what the solution is. It's a technical solution, and you get a new windshield. It's that simple. It may be expensive or what have you, but the actual solution to the problem is technical and simplistic. Adaptive problems, on the other hand, are the type of problems that even when you apply a solution, they adapt, right? So poverty is an adaptive and intractable problem. We apply one solution. We say we're going to do this one thing to eliminate or alleviate poverty, and it changes. There are changes that we can't control for, like changes in the macro economy, not only in the United States, but globally, right? How do you account for, changes in the oil industry, which so many people in our city are either employed directly or connected to? We recognize that we're making changes and we're showing up every day to do things to effectuate change in the city, but we know that problems change. And so we have to, of course, move as quickly as the problems do. And that's the other thing with government. We can't always do that. It's a big ship.
Well, we appreciate your work on that area. And
Thank you.
We'll see some improvement over the next year, and a subtle improvement over the next year or two.
Absolutely.
Devon, thanks very much for joining us.
Thank you so much for having me. Thank you.
Devon Douglas is the City of Tulsa's Chief Resilience Officer, speaking with us here on Studio Tulsa. If you'd like to learn more about the Tulsa Equality Indicators, you can visit their website at cityoftulsa.org/government/resilient Tulsa. Well, that's Studio Tulsa for today. Our program is produced by Scott Gregory. The views of our guests and commentators are their own and do not necessarily reflect the views of KWGS or its licensee, the University of Tulsa. I'm Rich Fisher. Thanks for listening.